Welcome, everyone, to the Commerce Marketer Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Zakwitz, and I'm excited to be joined on location in Las Vegas today by Jeffrey Granis, who is the director of digital at Juice Beauty. Today, we're going to talk about storytelling that inspires millennials, and millennials oftentimes punchline of jokes, right? But they have a lot of power, and they're doing a lot with changing how retailers look at just marketing in general, not even so much at millennials. So interesting topic, evolving topic, but I'm sure Jeffrey has a lot of things he can tell. So Jeffrey, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get into the fun stuff, why don't you give me a little background about yourself, how you got to Juice Beauty, and then some more information about who exactly Juice Beauty is.
Sure. Yeah, so I got my start in e-commerce actually like 17 years ago. I taught myself to code when I was in middle school and then built my own online business before I even entered high school. And then I went to college and did all sort of business track. I lived in Japan for a little bit. And then when I came back, I actually started working in PR. I didn't know what I wanted to do and no idea. So I worked at a pretty big PR agency called Edelman for a little bit. And then I just moved back into digital. I knew that's kind of what my calling was. And I worked for a small leather goods company for a little bit and then finally moved into beauty, which is where I've been for the last almost seven years. I've been at Juice for about 3 years now. And Juice Beauty is a company that makes skincare and makeup with certified organic ingredients. So we're part of the clean beauty revolution of natural and organic beauty that's we're seeing is really exploding. And a lot of the major beauty retailers are starting to expand their offerings for it. So it's definitely a great exponential trajectory for the industry.
Are your customers, I'm assuming they're countrywide, but do you have larger conglomerations? Do you find organic type products being more popular in places like LA, Denver, New York City? And obviously you're going to have more customers in your larger cities, but sometimes those movements don't really hit, you know, not to pick on Oklahoma, but like small town Oklahoma, right? It's just, it doesn't hit there. Do you guys find your demographics spread around pretty evenly through the country?
We definitely noticed that the coasts, I feel like, sort of start the trends. You know, obviously this is a generalization and I don't want to make a generalization about everyone, but we have noticed that the coasts were where we really sort of saw our demographic start. But because we live in an internet age, the information's there if you are interested in it. So we see across the board that we have customers all over the place. Because we are a digital company, we have retail footprints all over the US as well within Ulta and other retailers. But it's interesting to kind of see the demographics change over the period of time that the company's been around. We've been around for about 11 years, and much like food, organic food, right? 15, 20 years ago, you could only really find it in specialty places. You know, it wasn't in your local Safeway, which is my local San Francisco, our large sort of chain retailer for food. But I'm now guessing everyone probably even listening to this here at the conference has some type of organic food in their home or has eaten it within the last few days. So we're seeing something similar within the beauty industry, right? That it was sort of niche for a little bit, but now big retailers, like I was mentioning, Ulta has a huge clean beauty category, but they're all over the United States. So it's no longer just the coast, it's everywhere.
So Juice Beauty has been around for a long time and it's becoming picked up by those larger retailers now. How has that impacted you guys? Because you obviously have or had loyal customers that you were the go-to, right? You were the place to go. Mm-hmm. And now you're seeing that selection crop up here. I can go over here and pick up a little bit of this. Has that dramatically impacted your business or has it really not impacted that much because you've built a loyal following?
Definitely impacted. Just having more visibility with our brand is amazing and having it in more places. To us, having the shelf space and being in a store, you know, I'm not on the retail team, I'm on the digital team, but it doesn't hurt us at all. It helps kind of get the message of clean beauty out there, which is our whole goal, is just finding better alternatives to conventional chemical products. So for us, just getting the message out there is what's really important.
Very cool. So you mentioned you live in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So what's the best part about living in San Francisco?
That's a great question. You know, I live, I don't know if people are very familiar with the city, but I live in Outer Richmond, which is by the beach, Cliff House area, Sutro Baths. And I love that I'm still in the city, but it feels a little bit more low-key and suburban. But then you can go into city center super easily. I mean, we're 7x7, which is 7 miles by 7 miles. So it's not a big city. But I don't know, San Francisco is just very innovative. I mean, it's right in Silicon Valley. Silicon Valley is a little bit south towards like Palo Alto, San Jose area, but all of sort of the innovation somehow ends up in is inside of San Francisco, which is really awesome.
I write down answers to this to see if I can predict what you were going to say.
Yeah.
Right. And sometimes I'm spot on, sometimes I'm off. And this one, nothing against San Francisco, cool town, but I'm like, what's the thing they're known for that someone living there is like, oh, this is the best. So I wrote down tech scene.
Yeah. I mean, when it's kind of what I think about with LA, right? LA is known for Hollywood and entertainment. San Francisco to me is known as tech. New York, maybe fashion, you know, finance. To me, and I feel like to most people, San Francisco is really known as an innovator within the tech space.
All right, so today we're talking about storytelling that inspires. You know, storytelling, it's a topic and a marketing strategy that more and more retailers are applying, but some apply it better than others. It sounds easy to do. Oh, we'll just go to social and we'll tell some stuff and we'll put some stuff there and people will follow us. And it's really not the case.
Yeah.
And millennials specifically, I mentioned earlier, they're usually punchline of jokes, but they're shaping how retailers are viewing consumers as a whole, not just the millennial side. So tell us a little bit about what storytelling in marketing is, and then some ways that you guys use storytelling to target, you know, a millennial database.
So when we look at storytelling, right, we're a mission-driven company. Our whole goal is to really talk about clean beauty, talk about ingredient transparency. So for us, storytelling is really about why are we different? What makes us different? But still, what makes our performance just as good or better than conventional products? So when we look at storytelling and look at how we're going to tell a story, it's really we pull out key features from like our company ethos. We're all about sustainability. We're all about transparency. We're all about no animal testing, cruelty free. So there's these key points. I mean, there's more, but there's these key points that really sort of distills our message down to something that's very easy to digest and understandable. Because once you start getting into ingredient stories and deep information about what makes us different than normal or conventional products, it can get detailed and can get maybe a little overwhelming. So we try to find these key bites that are easy to digest that then we can amplify via all of our different channels.
How do you find those key bites?
Yeah, I mean, it's really looking into what your core values are and what your core story is. Like I talked about today, it's knowing what your mission is and always going back to it. And every choice that you make as a brand should align with your mission statements and your brand values. You know, there's tons of information, especially at the Bronto conference, about data and personalization and, you know, computer learning algorithms. But really, you need to be true to your mission and to your statements first, and then use all that data and all of these tools that we have in our toolbox to really figure out how you're going to get your message through all of these different tools to the people you're trying to target. For us, what we've seen is a large increase in millennial traffic to our site. We've done a lot of work to really target that demographic over the last year, and we've seen that it's worked, especially through social channels. But it's about leaning into what your data is showing you and what your data is saying is your demographic, and then focusing on with targeted, digestible sound bites that would make sense to that audience.
So when you talk about storytelling, how often do you tell a story? Obviously, your website, you're going to tell a story about who you are, brand recognition, right? You're going to try to influence a subscriber and just let them know all about the causes and reasons they should shop with you. You can do that in email marketing from a welcome series standpoint, right? But at some point, you've got to continue that story really forever. So how long, when you guys pick a quote-unquote story or a topic that you're going to funnel down, how long do you tell that story for? And when you're telling the story, which channels do you use? Are you using all channels? Are you choosing just, hey, for this one, we're going to use email and Instagram. For this one, we're going to do is Facebook and something. Or are you doing more of the symmetrical marketing, everything across at the same time across all channels?
Yeah, I guess it depends. To kind of start where you ended off is like, how do we choose the channels we tell a story on? Like I said, we have these sort of key eco values that we kind of use as our catalyst for all stories, right? Like it touches on ingredients or touches on sustainability or touches on animal, you know, cruelty free. But depending on what we want to talk about, like email is an example. Last year, they outlawed I'm pretty sure the entire United States, microbeads, which are little plastic beads used as exfoliants in conventional chemical products. They're plastic, so they would, you know, go off your face, down the drain, into the fish. We would ingest the fish. It was like ruining ecosystems, right? But email was a great place for us to tell that story. We were able to say, you know, we never use microbeads. here's something that just happened in the news, and we have a brand new exfoliant. So we try to, that's a good space for that, right? But then on social media, we'd probably have a beautiful shot of the actual texture of the product, and then have a little bit about, you know, did you know microbeads are now outlawed all across the United States? Or we're reaching out to influencers and we tell them, we reiterate the story of what are microbeads and why is our product different? I think you're, you know, whoever's listening to you, if they're vloggers or Instagrammers, whatever they do, it's like, they'd probably be interested to know this. Cause when I heard that, I was like, this is crazy. I'm so glad it's outlawed, but it's those little nuggets that tie back to our ingredients and tie back to our sustainability and eco values that really help not only sell the product, but also talk about the story and just all about clean beauty. So using those different channels to really amplify the message in different ways, because I feel like you can't just use the same message for each channel, is probably the best way to really story tell.
That's something that a lot of retailers, I believe, struggle with, is we have, whether it's a story or news or a promotion, is we just put the same thing, the same content across all channels and hope we touch someone, but the email to the social post look identical, right? Mm-hmm. So there's, in some respects, there's, well, why do I need to get your emails if I can just go to your social page and get it, or vice versa, right? So interesting you guys take the approach of saying, hey, not everything's the same. We need to talk to people differently based on how they interact on those channels there. So good insight, and I certainly appreciate that. You used the example of a news story, something that came down that you can amplify your story on and really reinforce what you guys do and your core commitment to your brand. What about when there's no news happening? So you, a couple of team members, you get together and say, hey, what stories are we going to talk about? Say, you've got three different stories proposed. They're all viable. How do you choose which story to go after when?
I guess it really depends. Like recently, I think it was today, we launched an email campaign surrounding California Dreamin', right? So we're from California, our company is from California, and we have a brand new makeup line with Gwyneth Paltrow, who's our creative director of makeup. And it's been around for about a year and some change now. But that's a good example of telling the story of the California girl that uses clean beauty, lives a healthy lifestyle. You know, maybe she does yoga, maybe she does running, whatever she does, but it's a story that goes back to our eco values of living a clean, healthy lifestyle and using products that, you know, mimic that. And we're from California, so that's a story in itself. But that's something that's totally different than microbeads. Totally separate, has nothing to do with microbeads, but is on a similar sort of eco clean beauty wave. And that's what we try to do with all of our different stories. Obviously, there's a balance between education, product, promotions. And we try to balance that and do segmentation, especially with Bronto. But it's really about knowing and trying different things. Testing is the best way to really kind of see what resonates and what fits.
So we talked earlier on, or I mentioned earlier on, that, you know, millennials are really changing the way retailers view the general consumer nowadays. And consumers are changing, right? Mobile phone adoption is really transitioning that. Amazon has set standards of expectations of consumers. It trickles down, especially to an email standpoint. 15% of consumers say consistently emails are relevant. 60% say consistently they're not relevant. Is storytelling the answer to relevant emails now?
We think so, because we are a mission-driven company. But I think it's got to be more holistic than just email, right? Social is incredibly important for us. I think there's data from Hootsuite that said it was 18 to 30 is the core demographic of Instagram, as an example, which is pretty much millennial. I mean, I think depending on who you ask, is 20 to 35 is the millennial audience, but it's all about talking to her on the channels that they're at, right? So we'll start on social. Hopefully that brings them to the site. They get into our retention engine, and then we continue to follow up with messages of education. Like, why did they come to us to begin with? Maybe it's because they wanted clean beauty. And if they want clean beauty, let's educate them why it's really important. But yeah, it's sort of interesting to kind of see within the generation itself for millennials. And the reason why I bring them up is because they are a driving force behind beauty, right? Beauty and skincare, makeup has a huge following, especially within the influencer community. And that targets to that sort of millennial audience. So they're really driving trends. They're really driving, you know, what's the new biggest thing. The Cut just recently had an article, which is part of New York Magazine, but it was talking about how natural and organic skincare and that space is probably one of the only spaces within beauty that's growing exponentially. So it's most likely driven by not only millennials, but anyone that's into beauty and that cares about wellness. But it's interesting to see that the trends that we're seeing are really run by influencers that are also part of that demographic, but also the retailers are seeing a change in people's willingness to try new things, especially in clean beauty.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm going to pick your brain just a little bit on influencers in a minute, because we heard about it earlier today here at the conference we're at, why we're in Las Vegas recording on site. Email marketing certainly plays in this. We mentioned this before. You can correct me if I'm wrong. I assume it's easier to tell a story on a social channel versus an email, because email is pretty much, hey, let's tell you something, and we, for the most part, end the communication there. Social, you can get back and forth. You can comment back. You can, you know, actually have quote-unquote conversations with your consumer base. So how do you guys use email today? Do you view it as a primary tool, a accompanying tool? How do you determine how the content that goes into the email, knowing it's more of a one-sided street or a one-way street versus a two-way, like a social platform might be?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, we do a bunch of different things, but one of the biggest is we actually incorporate UGC into our emails. UGC is user-generated content, which came from social or came from YouTube or Instagram or wherever, and we reinforce it within emails. Some of those emails do really, really well for us because it's not us so much preaching about what we believe in. It's saying, hey, this is the message that we've told other people and it's resonated with them. So let us show you what other people have said about our brand that they love about us, that they love about our products, that makes them feel good about putting it on. And we reinforce that within our emails. So that's one way that we kind of keep that conversation going within email. I would say also in email that we try to include actionable things, not besides click-through rates and getting them to a product page, but we include hashtags, at signs, so that people can continue the conversation on social media if they have questions or they just think it's really cool and they want to post about it.
Have you found one channel to be more successful than another? And it doesn't have to be in terms of sales, but from a storytelling or just engagement standpoint, email, we're getting higher opens than we normally see on social or Facebook, but Instagram's really our bread and butter here. Do you have one social channel that just kind of, or one channel in general that just dominates the engagement opportunities?
Definitely our Instagram channel more than pretty much any other channel. And I think that speaks to, again, the demographics of Instagram. And because we are in beauty, so it's very visually pleasing material. But I mean, our Instagram over the last, even just the last year, has doubled. Our engagement is a little bit like up 400%. It's pretty incredible the amount of feedback that we're getting on Instagram and the amount of engagement and likes and clicks. But that's why we love to reincorporate that wherever we can, especially in email, because it is so, it's such engaging content that we want to share it with everyone.
So you get the engagement on social. You mentioned a couple minutes ago on using influencers, which is not a new thing. Like storytelling is becoming a bigger thing nowadays. How much do you guys rely on influencers to push your message versus more in-house storytelling?
Sure. Well, I think it's not so much as rely. I think it should just be something in addition to what you should be telling anyways through email, through your website. But influencers are incredibly important, especially within the beauty industry, you know, beauty and cosmetics. They're a huge driving force. We reach out to a lot of micro influencers, which are not the big ones, but are a little bit smaller, but still have a great audience. Then there's the mid-tier that are slowly, you know, progressing pretty quickly. And then the big ones that cost a lot of money to reach out with, but they're still always there. And we always want to send them our newest product and hopefully they can try it. And some of them incorporate it in their regimens. But it's interesting to see influencer marketing, which I guess is the buzzword for it, came out of nowhere over the last, what, four years, that it's really had such an impact, especially within beauty. I mean, there's other industries as well. I feel like gaming and children's toys, which I think is interesting. But beauty is like a huge, huge platform for influencers.
I'm sure it was a natural evolution that went into it. So it wasn't you went into work one day. It's like, hey, we should do some storytelling here. How long has Juice Beauty been really focused on the storytelling principle as a marketing strategy?
I mean, it's definitely been part of the core value from the beginning because we are a mission-driven company. But I feel like since I joined 3 years ago, we've really tried to amp up the storytelling and amp up, you know, the ingredient story and really tout why we're different and why we're better and why you should choose us. But I think that has also, you know, we've been around for 11 years. So I feel like we're definitely ahead of the curve with clean beauty and our organic beauty, you know, natural beauty. And so now we're seeing this wave kind of hit of people being very interested in it. So now it's like, we really want you to know our story because we think you'll love it.
Why do you think retailers or brands have been so slow to adopt storytelling as a major communication strategy or outreach strategy for their consumers? Because you have some brands that have been doing it for a while. Mm-hmm. I think some of the bigger brands are starting to realize that, hey, we should probably be doing this, and they're getting into it, especially, and those are generally relying on influencers to kind of jumpstart it and pour gasoline on the fire. Yeah. But your general retailer seems very slow to adopt a storytelling approach. It's still more about, hey, let's send you an email, shop now, click here, make the purchase. You know, and it's more that the traditional, you know, online strategy. What do you think the adoption's been so slow?
I don't know. I think that's a great question, because I think as marketers or even anyone in digital, the whole point of our job is to tell a story, right? We take data, we learn from it, and we want to tell someone a story that will resonate with them. That's the whole point of just being relevant to someone you're reaching out to. So I don't know. I feel like since I've been working and professionally working, that everything that I've done is revolves around storytelling, because you're trying to get some type of message across.
So I find it fascinating that you said our whole job as marketers is to tell a story. And I think if you quizzed a lot of marketers, they wouldn't use that terminology. Some might say influence someone to buy something, or it's always around that purchase or conversion type path. And I find it very fascinating that you use, hey, we're just telling a story here. We'll let the rest happen on its own based on how we influence.
Yeah. That's the whole point, right? Of course, our job is to drive revenue or whatever your goal is for the end user. But during that process, you have to instill trust and transparency about why you think this is important for them to know. And that's all storytelling. I mean, everything is pretty much storytelling, in my mind, at least.
Are there any retailers that you look around? We're talking about retailers being slow to adopt it. Any retailers, you know, you look around and say, hey, you know what, they're doing that really well, or, you know, they really went gung-ho with this thing and they do a great job of it. Can you think of any offhand?
I can. I don't know if I want to say. No, but I want to stay out of beauty, because obviously I think we do the most amazing job out of everyone. But this one is really interesting. It's the Poo-Pourri. I know it's, you know, it's a little interesting, but they did an amazing job of taking something that was pretty taboo and telling a story behind it. And I don't know if you are familiar with what Poo-Pourri is, but it's a spray for toilet usage.
I saw that, this is years ago, on, was it Danny Deutsch? Yeah. The next big thing, I forgot what the show was. I think it was on CNBC or MSNBC, but he used to have this, you know, these entrepreneurs that come on, they just had this aha moment, and it was always like, how do I make my life better? So he told a story about how he invented that.
Yeah.
And it was really invented out of embarrassment.
And it's things like that. I mean, there's tons of different companies now, like Casper Mattress, you know, they've done a lot of interesting storytelling within social media, especially, or paid social. But it's really about taking something that's so different and unique. Warby Parker is actually a really good one. You know, they've been around for what, maybe 10 years now, but they've done a great job of telling a different story of what your experience should be like buying glasses, prescription glasses. And they continue that story by saying you should not have to pay these crazy prices to get the glasses that you need to do your daily life. So there's stories in everything, and I feel like there's a lot of great brands that have done that, like the ones that I just mentioned.
So the concept today is storytelling to millennials, right? And we're talking about storytelling as a overarching theme, because I think it's important to really frame it as a bigger concept than just to millennials. But if we want to wrap the millennials in there, what about millennials make storytelling so important? Why do they gravitate toward it so much more than, say, I don't know, Generation X might, or even your younger generation now that's, I don't even know, what do they call them now?
I actually don't know.
Someone will give them a name that everyone will start referring to them as, and then there'll be a punchline. But what is it about millennials that makes them so special?
You know, before I answer that question, I want to caveat that making a generalization about any generation of people puts you in a hairy situation. But from what we've seen, right, and people that are interested in, you know, not all millennials are interested in beauty, but what we've seen, that those that are interested in beauty are open to clean beauty and new products and trying new things. And what I think it is, and full disclosure, I am part of the millennial demographic. I think it's, we've grew up in the internet age, right? Where we can research anything and everything. We look it up. We want to learn about a product most of the time before we invest, especially if it's something as important as skincare. But that's where I think it's really important for, like, for us, we're really transparent about what our ingredients are. And we're transparent about everything that we do so that you can research it and it's all there. If you want to nerd out, you can. But that's what I think it really is just being able to tell a story and be open and transparent and have a stand. You know, like, we're eco, we're clean beauty. And I think that's what resonates with the millennial audience. Again, sweeping generalization I just made, this is what we've seen.
With storytelling as a whole, it probably depends on where you look, because like you said, you can get different age groups based on where you look for it. I hate to say it, a little bit older than the millennial demographics, but I really fit into the same, you know, the generalization as they do. I grew up in a technology era. Mm-hmm. I have a mobile phone. I do most of my stuff on a mobile phone. So I fit right in there. I expect the conveniences. I think people in their 40s, 50s, I think they expect those same conveniences. I don't think it's a millennial conversation. I think millennials are just more used to it because that's their day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. It might be one of the reasons retailers are slow to adopt. They say, well, that's for millennials. It's not for, you know, our demographics. And I think it's a wrong statement. But is there something that those brands who maybe don't think they have that quote-unquote millennial demographic that want to get into using more storytelling, what are some ways they can get started, or any advice you would give them to start approaching that storytelling initiative?
Yeah, I mean, it's really kind of finding your key values and what your story is. Because I think everyone starts with a mission statement, right? Like, that's the business 101 of starting a company. But it's, you know, over the years, sometimes it deviates, sometimes it changes. But it's really going back to what your core value is and distilling your message into something that's interesting for people to know. But we are talking about millennials today, but obviously not all of our customers are millennials. It's just the biggest growth that we've seen over the last few years. And that doesn't mean that any other generation doesn't care about storytelling, you know? It still can be used for other generations. Stories told across all different mediums. I think it's just where you're really speaking to them and how you're speaking to them is the difference between the generations.
Through storytelling over the last couple of years, has there been anything you guys have learned, or just you specifically have learned about your audience that maybe you didn't expect?
They really care about ingredients. And I know that I keep coming back to that, but once someone understands what clean beauty is and what they were previously putting on their skin, they become, you know, really kind of interested and want to learn more. And so having the education available if they do want to learn more. But that was what was really interesting to me, is that once people kind of make the switch or try to, you know, incorporate a few products into their regimen, they've just opened the door to a lot of questions and they want a lot of answers. That's what was really interesting, that the people that are into clean beauty actually are very smart and they know a lot. I'm not saying other people aren't smart, but they know a lot and they do their research.
How do you balance storytelling versus traditional marketing? Because I'm assuming you still do, especially on the email front, you probably send emails out that are just more product oriented, ask people to buy. And there's nothing wrong with that, but you guys are so strong with your storytelling tactics, or strategies, I should say, more than tactics. How do you balance that with, hey, we're just going to send a promotional email today. We're going to ask people to buy something. They're going to buy it, or some of them are going to buy it. Do you ever get negative blowback from your audience for that? Or have you guys found that you struck the right balance with it? Or do you still think there's improvements to be made there?
You know, promotional is a good example, like friends and family, which is typical within the beauty retail space of twice a year you have a large sale. But we still try to incorporate messaging about why we're different, whether it be imagery. So it's beautiful images of amazing ingredients or grape fields, because we use a lot of, you know, grapes, resveratrol-rich grape seed is in all of our products. But using visuals that are an indication of this looks clean to me, and then following it up with a few bullet points of, you know, why we're different. But especially with product, honestly, product launching, for us, it is all about storytelling, because it's so important for people to know why is this product different and what's good about it, that we have the opportunity to sell something different. So really, it's probably purely promotional emails where we could struggle a little bit of being able to tell us a cohesive story, because really we just want people to shop. But I think it comes from something that's like a visual cue of something that's really on brand and part of our ethos.
Final question before we get you out of here on some more fun topics here. Going back to the initial part of the conversation where you guys can be found in retailers across the country now, has there been any struggle, at least from your side, and I know you're on the digital side, with when you go to and leave a retailer to sell your products, you're kind of up to their whim and reputation a little bit. You can't necessarily tell your story. Now, someone's going there and shopping, they may well be aware of your story, so you already have that built in, but casual shopper there, right? You could have a United Airlines episode with Alta that all of a sudden you're there and you kind of get lumped in guilt by association. So have you guys had any sort of conversations or struggles with not being able to necessarily control your message with those outside retailers?
Again, caveat, I'm not on the retail team. What I think is important for us is for our packaging to really speak to any questions that a customer would have. We try to include, like I said, full transparency within our packaging of ingredients, eco values, what we're all about. You know, we're cruelty free. All of those key things that make us what we are has to be incorporated on our packaging, because I feel like in a retail environment, again, I'm coming from a digital perspective, I think packaging is really important, and having your messages on the packaging was probably what I would guess would be the best way to kind of get your message across.
Human emotion plays into what defines a good story, right? Some people are like certain books over others. It doesn't make it a bad book. Would you say at a high level that a good story is anything that stays true to your values, your brand's values?
Yeah, I think it's really about being honest, right? You know, you're not trying to trick anyone. You're just being honest to your core values and what your whole brand is about. And then also being able to back it up with whatever you are selling. If you have the most amazing story and then your product stinks, like it's just not good, I mean, you just ruined your trust. You've ruined all that you've done to really kind of build up your brand. So making sure you have products, like I use all of our products. I love our products. I think they're most amazing products. We can back it up with the products, right? And the products have to match with the story that you're telling. So I think that's, besides obviously being true and honest with what your core is all about, but then being able to back it up with the products that you are selling.
I was going to say, your skin looks great.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. So good conversation about storytelling. Anything maybe I neglected to talk about today that you feel is really important in the storytelling concept?
I think it's just really finding what your voice is, and then who you want to talk to and how to talk to that person, people, group of people, whatever it is. And then distilling it down into something that's very easy to understand and digestible that then can also be backed up by amazing products.
Very cool. So Jeffrey Granis, Director of Digital at Juice Beauty, we are going to get you out of here. Thanks so much for your time, but we're not going to get you out of here yet. I'm going to whip out the clock.
Okay.
15 seconds. Name as many fish as you can in 15 seconds. Okay. Go.
Sea bass, salmon, tuna. Why am I blanking on fish? Flounder. Rockfish.
Time's up.
Oh, man.
You went five. You got five deep. So I'm in the mood for sea bass now.
There's so many that I could have named now as I'm like thinking about it. I could have just went down literally like a tuna list that I see, or not a tuna list, a sushi list that I see in my head of all the things I could have said, but it was on the spot.
I've been doing this for years. Next to no one says goldfish. And if you listen to the podcast, I've probably said this a million times. No one says goldfish. I can't believe it.
Who got the most? Is there anyone? Did you ask this question all today?
Yeah, but I don't know in what order these episodes are going to air. So
you don't want to give me spoilers?
Yeah.
No spoilers.
Offline, I'll tell you who got the most so far. So Jeffrey Granis, Director of Digital at Juice Beauty, thanks again for your time today. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
And thanks again for listening to another Commerce Marketer podcast. We'll be back on our next episode talking about something probably even more exciting.